You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. This is Mike Picanato, your host for Unterwegs, the En Route podcast. And I'm super excited to be able to come to you today from Sprig, the creative hub for Envision Berlin, this brand new creative space that we were able to rent in Berlin-Weißensee as part of the ongoing ministry of Envision Berlin. And one of the rooms we've set up is to be this ministry hub space with a great library for other workers in the city. And in addition to that, our podcast recording studio. The day after we moved into the space and started to get things up, we had a team come from the United States. And that team was a super help to the ministries in Berlin, but also were able to help us begin to get our space set up. And I was also able to sit down and record with several of the people from that team. So over the next couple of weeks, we'll be able to hear some of the podcasts that we've recorded with them. And today's episode, I'm really excited to be able to bring to you. It's a recording with a friend of mine, someone I've known for a long time, had the opportunity to work with for a couple of years, and was able to do the five questions series with him. And I think you'll enjoy listening to his perspective. He'll introduce himself during the podcast, and I hope that you enjoy today's show. All right, Larry, it is so great to have you here today. This has been so special this week to have you in Berlin and to get to spend time with you again.
It was great to get off the plane and see you at the airport and just be able to be part of your life for a short time here in Berlin with the two of you.
Larry and I go way back. It was in 1996 that we first started working together. I remember I started at the church on August 11th, 1996. I remember that because it was your birthday. I remember your birthday because that's the day I started. It's been great to now be able to reconnect again 25 years later.
And it's great to see you. I think you're about the age I was when we hired you. And so now I'm an old guy and you're like a middle-aged guy and there's no young guy around here. So I saw the picture of you and Alyssa at your house, and there was a series of pictures, but this goes back to your wedding. And I said, I know that young couple. They used to live next to us in Minnesota.
We got married in that June, actually. And so we got married in June and then started at the church in August. So that is almost exactly how we looked.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Larry, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit for those who don't know you?
Yeah. Larry Thorson, Leslie and I, my wife and I have been in ministry. I think we just added it up. It's about 44 years. And most of that with the Christian Missionary Alliance. And we've served overseas a couple of times. We were in Ecuador twice with the Christian Missionary Alliance, and years earlier, we were in the Philippines for a couple of years with a non-alliance position, but we have been pastoring and working in district offices, two different district offices over the years. So people ask me, what year were you there? What year was this? And I don't remember anymore. Yeah, just really good ministry. Sometimes I can't believe that God, the faithfulness of the Lord through these years, to be able to use somebody like me, that I don't necessarily see myself with a lot of gifts. I want to relate to those that see themselves as kind of an average student. I'm a C student. I'm not the brightest bulb, light at all. But I'm just really grateful that God's used us as we've tried to be faithful to him.
I know, Alyssa and I really enjoyed our time with you and Leslie when we were serving there. And I always saw you as a really, very much an encourager. So for someone who says that he doesn't have many gifts, I know I enjoyed your teaching time there and really enjoyed your gifts of encouragement.
Oh, thank you. I do think the Lord's placed us in ministries where there are hurting people. And we've gone into churches that have experienced some traumatic things that have happened. And we know that God's placed us there for that season. We've never really stayed anywhere real long. 9 years in our current ministry is the longest we've ever been in one place. But that's coming to a close as well. A month and a half away from retirement.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Not knowing exactly what that'll look like, but wanting to continue to serve the Lord just in a little different role.
Been working on this 5-question series that I've been doing with different people. And kind of the goal is to interview people from a wide variety of backgrounds and ask them the same 5 questions. And part of that is just my own curiosity on how people from different backgrounds will answer them, in part to see where are we alike, but also just to really explore the differences between people and the experiences they've had in life. So the first question is, what is a significant transition you have experienced?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that you've experienced as well, Mike, whenever you transition to a different culture, when you pick up your family and you move across an ocean. Like I said, we've done that in our ministry experiences and career, and that's a huge transition, but one that we'd do again if the Lord gave us strength and wanted us to do that. So that, and then transitioning from churches, I served in churches as the pastor of the church, and then transitioning into district ministries with the CMA. And there's a lot of transition in that as well. And I suppose right now, again, I'm in the midst of one as my mind transitions to our retirement. We bought a place already in South Dakota where my wife's from, and we're selling our house in Minnesota. And so while I'm here, some of those things are in process back home. And so I feel like I'm in the middle of transition right now.
What are some of the things that when you're in those times of transition that have been unsettling for you?
I think between my wife, Leslie, and I'm the worrier of the two. She just says, oh, God will take care of that. Or why would you necessarily worry about that? But I'm the detail person that wants to know the schedule, the time. I remember when we moved to the Philippines, I just had to take my watch off and get rid of it. I couldn't have a watch there because they didn't work by the watch. The watch was not part of that culture. That was difficult, I think, for me until I just embraced that we don't do that here. And so relax, you know.
I remember a story you told me once about your setting the clocks in your family's house before you went on vacation.
Okay. Listen, married men out there, do not do this. I would always, if we decided we're going to leave on vacation or go anywhere and we want to get out the door at 6 a.m., 6:02 is not, that does not work for me. Whereas my wife would just say, you know, 6:15, we're on vacation, relax. And so one year I changed all the clocks and I changed my wife's watch while she was sleeping and had it on the nightstand there. And so we got up and of course we didn't leave. Let's just say it was 6 o'clock. We didn't leave at 6 o'clock. It was probably 6:20, 6:25, but in reality it was 5:25. And so I'm just enjoying myself and relaxed. And Leslie said to me as we were going down the road, you are really relaxed right now. I just think this is wonderful. And then I'm kind of giggling and I told her what I had done. She was not happy. So don't do that. Be honest with your wife. So I never was able to do that. I have a whole book of things you can do one time in your marriage. Or my wife and I always said there's one, if we ever wrote a book, it would be 101 threats that you can give your kids one time because they'll figure it out afterwards.
So is that before or after you went to the Philippines?
That would have been after. I didn't learn my lesson well enough to the Philippines. I came back.
You came back and then you readjusted to the culture in the U.S.
I had to get used to the culture again. She's probably better prepared for cross-cultural ministry in most contexts because for her to be on time means a couple minutes late to whatever. For me to be on time means 10 minutes early. Hmm. And so when I pastored, I was always grateful. And you know this, when we pastored together, it was just a walk across the parking lot from the two parsonages that church had. And so I could go at any time. I didn't have to worry about it. But if we were dependent on getting out the door and taking public transportation like you do here in Berlin and getting to someplace on time, it would take me a while to settle in, whereas Leslie would be fine no matter what time we got there.
What's one of the most important risks you have taken?
I would say it was our second time to go back to Ecuador. Again, my wife, she's more of a risk taker than I am. I'm the worrier. So I'm looking at where are we currently in our life and ministry and age, and where are we financially, and how are we going to establish something towards that day someday when we would retire. And so I'm adding it all up, and she's like, let's just go. God will take care of us. So I took those steps. And again, I give credit to my wife to say, come on, let's do this. Let's trust the Lord. So that was a big step, that second time to go back to Ecuador. And that was only for a year, it turned out. We were there during the transition of the Alliance Academy from run totally by the CMA to a multi-mission run school. But I know God wanted us there at that very moment for that hour. But if it were just me, I probably wouldn't have taken the risk of going back.
What was the risk?
The risk was, once again, selling what we had, giving away what we had, going down to where, and this is something that most intercultural people experience, getting down to where there's no more keys in your pocket. You sell the car, no car key. You sell the house, no house keys. And so all of a sudden you're reaching for your keys and you have no keys. You're starting all over. Of course, depending on what place you go in the world, they're going to hand you a billion keys. You'll have more keys than you want, because like our apartment in Ecuador, every single door locked. And so all of a sudden we have plenty of keys, but there's that moment of transition when you're keyless, where you've said goodbye to whatever it is that you know and the comfortable, and you get rid of all of that and you go down to empty pockets and then start over what God has.
And that's a really strange time when many of the people we studied with or people our age are in that acquisition stage.
Yeah. I do remember one time in ministry when somebody in the church said that they had paid off their house. And I remember thinking, will I ever get a place where I'll pay off a house? And it's only by God's grace and mercy, you know, that as I reach that stage of retirement, that I can tell the faithfulness of the Lord. And yes, you know, we're going to be able to go debt-free into a housing situation. And I don't know how that happened. You know, all those years of wondering how we're going to make the next step. But God's faithful, and I thank the Lord for that.
I think that that's kind of the definition of risk a lot of times, isn't it? That we don't know what that end result might be. We just know that it's hard to imagine us getting there from here.
I think it's H.M. Murray that said, until one's committed, there's a hesitancy and a chance to draw back. But the moment one definitely commits themselves, then God moves too. And all manner of unforeseen incidents, people, and material assistance, which no one would have dreamed possible, begins to flow towards you. Now, that's a bit of a paraphrase. But it's that moment where you say, okay, God, I don't know. And when you go to a foreign field like you folks did here in Berlin, you don't know who you're going to work with necessarily. You might have met them once. You don't know what the team dynamic's going to be. You don't know anything. And that's the risk, and that's, you got to take that step. And I know God's calling people to just say, I'm going to step into the water. I'm going to make that first step, and I know God will be faithful.
What's one decision you wish you hadn't made?
Decision I wish I didn't make. Because we've not stayed anywhere real long, although I really think the Lord led us, I don't feel it was not being obedient to the Lord, maybe, but I can think of one place that I think I left too soon, and it would have been better if I would have stayed. So a decision to leave when maybe I should have stayed. And I won't go into specifics about where, because that doesn't matter. But looking back on my life, I think I left too soon one time.
Larry, what role does faith play in your life?
Well, it sounds like I'm just saying this, but everything. You can't do anything if not by faith. To trust the Lord for, let's say, our daily bread, going back to wondering what the future will hold. And if I make this choice or I do this, is that smart? You know, and is that going to provide for my family? Is that going to be wise for the future? All of that's by faith. So anything we do, that big decision or that small decision, it has to be by faith. And again, you know, I talked about my wife being the one with more courage and me being a little slower. I'd say that's faith. She's taught me faith, and not just on the big decisions of career or do we go to this church or do we not or whatever, but just in the little things that we've decided to do all along. So right now, back home, we had sold our house, I thought, but it didn't go through. This is just today now.
Oh, no.
And I found out last night from my wife that it didn't go through, and the reasons doesn't matter. But now we are going to list our house and put it up. And we gotten a pretty nice offer on our house. And so I'm the one saying, oh, man, she says, I knew you would worry about this, Larry. I didn't want to tell you about this till you got home. So faith is just saying, God, do it again. You've done it before. Please do it again. And right now, I'm thinking about that, even with the sale of our house.
Hmm. I told the group that you're with here that one of the big influences you've had on my life is in the area of fasting. I know that faith for me plays a huge role in that, in the exercise of the different spiritual disciplines and how you actually put those into place. But can you talk a little bit about your experience with fasting?
Well, Mike, you were there when I first fasted, and as we served that church together, and I was going through some kind of lower experiences in my life, not because of you, but just because of circumstances around. And even my son, who was in high school at the time, came and said, Dad, you've lost your joy. Something's wrong. And he could see that. And Bill Bright with Campus Crusade at the time was still living, and he was talking about fasting. And at one point, he called the church to fast for 40 days. And I knew the second I heard it that I was supposed to do that. But I didn't know if I could make it really 40 minutes. Because you can't see me, fortunately, but I'm what you call a fat guy, and I didn't know if I could do that. And so I put the church bulletin, it's time to fast, and Bill Bright's calling us to a fast. And if anybody wants to know more about fasting for 40 days, come see me. And one person came to see me, and he's sitting across the table from me right now. And so together we endeavored to fast for that first 40 days. And it was...
I didn't quite make it.
Well, you were pretty close.
Yeah.
And it isn't about making it. The Lord mm-hmm. isn't up keeping score saying, you know, Mike, you kind of failed on that. Because he just is thrilled as our Heavenly Father that we're taking some time setting aside. And what would have been thinking about food is now thinking about the Lord. And so I determine in the fast that I do, and there's probably various ways to fast. I'm not trying to prescribe that everyone should fast the way that I fast. But I just decide I'm not asking the Lord for anything during those fasts. It's not a give me, genie come out of the bottle and grant me my wishes. I just want to listen. So all of my fast days are saying, Lord, speak for your servant. Listens. And, you know, that led to a change of places to minister as God called me into district work on the 40th day of the fast.
Mm.
That started a regular, I'd say every 2 years, not by the clock, but all of a sudden I say, I just need to spend time again in fasting. And so It's been a regular part of my ministry. If you look up how many times the Bible talks about prayer, it's prayer and fasting. Mm. But we rarely talk about the fasting part of it.
Why do you think that is?
It's not easy. You know, we like to eat. One of the highlights of being here in Berlin is no matter what you like, it's here. Whatever kind of food, whatever kind of restaurant you might be looking for, it's here in Berlin. And we love that. And there's nothing wrong with eating either, because you look at the times that Jesus feasted with his friends, and it's an evangelism tool. So I'm not against eating, but there's a time for fasting. So I would encourage anybody that happens to be listening that says, I really haven't done that. I haven't included fasting as part of my spiritual disciplines. I encourage you to ask the Lord how you might do that in your life.
There might be some people who hear that and respond like you did instantly and say, oh, that's absolutely for me. There might be people who do it a little more like I did, which is, 40, oof, that's a long time without food. And it doesn't have to be 40 days, but even the thought of going without food at all is something that's terrifying to them. And what convinced me was just starting to look up what the Bible says about fasting. And like you said, how often it's mentioned. And the more I looked at that, the more I realized a practice of prayer that has been absence of fasting for me is missing an important ingredient in the way Jesus and, well, throughout the Bible, the way prayer was defined. And so for me, it really did become more of an act of obedience than it became I'm excited about doing this.
And I'd encourage people to start small. You think, well, I've never fasted, that I hadn't either. But we had, I think it was 3 days of fasting. We had a satellite dish back in those days up mm-hmm. on the church. We had 3 days of Bill Bright speaking to us. And, you know, it was a juice fast. We had juice there. And that's how we started. And it was during those 3 days when he talked about next year. Mm. And that's when God said, I want you to do this. And so don't worry about the number of days. Just start, do something. It's like, you know, you read about the saints that would get up at 4 a.m. and pray, and you think, man, I can't get up at 4 a.m. Well, get up 10 minutes earlier mm-hmm. And pray. And it's the same with fasting. Skip one meal a week, but start with something that says, I'm serious about this. I love you, Lord, more than I love McDonald's cheeseburgers. And just take those first steps.
And this is where I think coming back to that role of faith in life, it's so important is that there's a cumulative effect to practicing things of faith. It's like a muscle. It does grow as you use it.
Mm-hmm. It's like any habit. It takes time. So a bad habit, you didn't do it once and you had a bad habit. Mm-hmm. You did it over and over again. And any good habit takes time to develop as well. So fasting is one of them. And so again, pray and continue to pray and pray without ceasing and add to your prayer, daily prayers. I've appreciated here with the team, Mike, you've been leading us in a morning prayer time, meditation time, and an evening prayer time. And that's been really good. And so start somewhere mm-hmm. and pray, but include fasting. And before long, it'll just be a habit. It'll be part of your life. And you'll say, just like you say, I need to eat again. I'm hungry. You'll say, I need to pray or I need to fast.
Mm-hmm. Harry, what are current projects or what are you working on next?
Right now, as I mentioned, I am finishing up full-time ministry, but certainly not finishing ministry. I'm looking to do interim pastoral work in the eastern half of South Dakota and the western side of Minnesota to be available to fill the pulpit in churches, but not just fill the pulpit, but to be able to lead a church through transition to their new senior pastor. So that's coming up, and that's something I'm thinking about quite a bit. And I want to finish well at my current ministry assignment in Minnesota. And I don't want to, I just want to say everything I'm supposed to say. And the Lord's given me ideas that, you know, you need to say this before you leave. Mm-hmm. So again, a life of transition. I did jot down mostly so because I'm getting so senile, I don't remember half the stuff. So I'm jotting down so I'll remember, but the next generation will see it. My kids will see it. I'm jotting down kind of the life ministry story so that hopefully someday, I have three children and they all love the Lord, but at various amounts of following faithfulness to the Lord right now. But my hope is that someday they'll say, okay, Dad, you know, here's the good, the bad, and the ugly about my dad, but look what God did. And they'll see that story and it'll encourage them. So that's something, especially over COVID, that I've been writing. And I don't see myself as a writer either, but it just came out of me. And so I thank the Lord for, because I think he was part of that. Mm.
If you do ever write that book, 101 Threats You Can Use for Your Kids Just Once,
yeah,
I'd be interested in seeing an advanced copy of that.
Yeah, not just threats, but bribes. Bribes and threats. And we've laughed about that. You know, we played this at one of the international worker family homes, which we've been in each evening. And I said to one of the kids, let's play the quietest game. And so one of our team and two of their kids decided to play the quietest game. And they would not, the younger daughter dropped out pretty fast, but the older boy and our international or our team member that was there, they would not give in. And no matter how hard we tricked them or tried to say something, they played the quietest game. So the quietest game is one of those things you can use once, and then they figure it out. You know,
not so much fun anymore.
Yeah, it's not fun. And you don't want your kid to be 20 and still not get it. So yeah.
Let's see who can hit the softest. You go first.
or the fun one I used all the time is, you go hide and I won't come find you.
And so you used it all the time.
All the time. My kids are slow. It took them a long time. So they're in the other room. I'm hiding. Yeah, I told you I won't come find you. These MKs, though, knew that one.
They did.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, their parents must have played it already.
Yeah,
with
I think so. That's why I say in the book, it can only be used one time normally.
Yeah. Well, Larry, thanks again for spending some time with us. And it's just been great having you here and knowing that where you're moving in South Dakota, we have some connections with the church there.
Yeah.
And so it's fun to know that there's another familiar face where we'll be visiting.
Yeah. And Mike, I so enjoy being here with you and can pray more intelligently now. We've prayed for you in the past, but now I can see, I can visualize, I know where you are producing this podcast. I get it now. And you know what your world is like, what your neighborhood is like, and I appreciate being here with you.
Thanks. Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of I Am Intercultural, a division of Exigent Communication, in partnership with Envision Berlin. Please like, share, and subscribe. Podcast music is by Mike Pippinato.